The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect that of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
And it's another beautiful day in paradise. You know what time it is? Analyze This, 93.1 FM, WTJX Radio, NPR, here in the U.S. Virgin Islands. My name is Neville James, and we got a great show to wrap up this November week, the 20th in 2020, okay? November 20th, 2020. Let me get you the COVID-19 data right off the top, because we got special guests on the line waiting. Territorial ratio, 142 negative, 13 positive, just under an 11 to 1 ratio for yesterday's data. Not good. 22 negatives and 4 positives on St. Croix. 120 negatives to 9 positives on St. Thomas. We didn't get any data for St. John. Territory-wide, we're up to 27,174 people tested. We have 83 pending, so of the 27,091 confirmed tests, we have 25,609 negative and 1,482 positive, of which 1,393 have recovered. We have 66 active, and we've unfortunately suffered 23 fatalities on the mainland. Average numbers, 11,900,000 positives. Worldometer.info actually has us as a country over 12 million. And deaths are median 255,300. Okay? Not good. Yesterday we did okay at Wall Street. Dow closed at 29,483.23, up 44.81. Kind of flat. 18 out of 30 of the blue chip stocks saw gains. Unfortunately, United Health Group was the biggest loser, share-wise and percentage-wise. So we got to keep an eye on that, but we need to keep an eye on where we're at with COVID-19. We've been doing well. Actually, the New York Times had us early in this week on Monday as the only jurisdiction under the American flag where we were low and remaining low, but now we've been moved up into that middle designation of low, but moving high. So we're getting higher, so we need to keep an eye on that. It's my good pleasure to have with us the leadership of the Virgin Islands Human Services Department, led by the one and only Kimberly Kazi Gomez, and she has her deputies joining us. The deputies aren't on the line yet. Well, they will be joining us eventually. But I think the commissioner is on the line. Good morning, Commish. How are you?
Good morning. I am great. Happy Friday.
Definitely. Definitely. I can hear it in your voice.
I think, my assistants are, they're calling in shortly. Yep. If they're on already.
Okay, good. How you been?
I have been, this week was in all transparency and honesty, this was a long week for some reason. But I think we're doing well. We're glad that the new fiscal year has started and our budgets are online. So that gives us a little bit of the ability to do things, which we're excited about.
Okay. That's good to hear. Now, this is a long week. The next week is a short week. So, so it balances out. Okay.
Well, it's so funny because it's all relative. So because we run so many 24-hour facilities, we just run 24/7, 365, I think, just like police and hospitals. That's what we do when we do it well. So we will give thanks on Thursday for all our blessings that we have. And I heard you talking about the COVID numbers and spiking again a little bit on St. Croix especially. So we just have to continue to do our due diligence. You know,
well,
social distancing and washing your hands and wearing your mask.
Well, you know, I try to do what I can. You know, we got to stay on top of things until we get that vaccine. It's a marathon, you know, so we got to be careful.
It is a marathon, and we have to make sure that we're staying home and being safe about it. We're all getting antsy. That's the thing. We're all getting antsy because we're such a social community. And so when we have to stay home, it ends up being we just go nuts. And yeah. There's a lot of depression that's happening because of that. And then people just let their guards down.
Yeah, the claustrophobic dynamic can wear on you. And that's the concern right about now. So, you know, I'm not going to be like paranoid because some people are like, well, I'm not taking the vaccine. No, I'm going to take it.
You're going to be the first in line.
Yeah. Get me vaccinated so I can, because I want to get back my life. Right now, I don't have it. You know, I'm limited in what I can do. And at some point, we got to, you know, look at some level of normalcy, I would think.
I would hope so. You know, I'm really concerned about my senior population and them staying home so much and not having that socialization. Our senior centers are such a huge part of their lives. And so not to be able to have them. And then our senior homes, you know, the visitations are so important for the livelihood and that connection as much for the resident as it is for the family members. So we're hoping that eventually we'll be able to get back to some of that.
Okay, that's good. It's my understanding that we've got the lieutenants, the deputies. Kimberly Kazi Gomez is like Clint Eastwood. coming up the road, and you know, everybody wants to be behind her. Assistant Commissioner Carla Benjamin and Mikhail Raima Brown, I believe it's St. Croix and St. Thomas, respectively. Morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you? Got both ladies or just one?
Both.
Got both.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Good. So we got the trifecta here this morning. So I'm glad we got the leadership here. Good morning. Ladies, introduce yourself, starting with Ms. Benjamin.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Carla Benjamin. I am one of the assistant commissioners at the Department of Human Services. I am based on St. Croix, but I have territorial oversight of all of the children's programming, from child care to Head Start, investigations, foster care and adoption, Office of Residential Services, and Division of Intervention and Prevention Services, which includes YRC. Thank you so much for having us.
You got it. And Commissioner Raima Brown, good morning. Long time no hear. Good to hear your voice. Commissioner Raima Brown?
Hello?
Yes, how are you?
Yes, are you hearing me now? I'm good. Yes, very good to be back on the show today. Mikhail Raima Brown. I am the assistant commissioner based on St. Thomas, but we have, as AC Benjamin says, we have territorial oversight over several programs, and the programs that I have territorial oversight of is the Division of Family Assistance, which is a very big one. A lot of people know it with food stamp or SNAP, as we call it now, temporary assistance to needy family and all the other cash and financial assistance programs. I also oversee Medicaid and CHIP services. This is the medical assistance that give you access to health care for our low-income individuals in the territory. I have oversight over the disabilities and rehabilitation services. The large program under that division is the federally funded vocational rehab services that help individuals with disabilities transition to employment and self-sufficiency. And we also work with transitioning adolescents and individuals who are older blind and help people to really live a life that is self-sufficient as much as possible with their disability. And then I have the Division of Senior Citizens Affairs, and that is a very large division with a host of programs, which I'm sure we'll touch on this morning. So very good to be here with you all today.
Awesome. Let me get back to Assistant Commissioner Benjamin real quick before we cycle back to the power broker for the agency. How's Head Start and everything that has to do with child care and regulatory services and children and family services, given what we're dealing with COVID?
Well, in the COVID environment, we're all making adjustments as is necessary. With Head Start, school is well underway. It is virtual, so there are no children sitting in classrooms, but there is instruction that's happening virtually. It's not synchronous classrooms where the children have to sit in front of a screen and have an instructor on the other end. Because that age group, as you know, the age group for Head Start is 3 to 5. That does not work well with children that age. But we do have teachers connecting with the parents regularly. And we do have meal distributions that's taking place. So the program is continuing to provide our children with meals daily, and those are dropped off at different points where they can be picked up in some cases, and then in other cases, parents are coming to the Head Start centers and picking up the prepared meals. With the Head Start program, we are kind of gauging what's happening with the COVID-19 environment, and as soon as it is safe for children to return to classroom, we will make sure that we are able to do that in a manner that is as safe as possible for our children, as well as for our staff. Currently, we do have openings for the Head Start program. We recruit year-round, but I think with COVID and with classrooms being virtual, perhaps not everyone is fully aware of the fact that school is actually happening, or it might just be very different. But this is definitely not the normal course of events where we have openings in classrooms. And right now we have several openings in the St. Croix District, fewer in the St. Thomas District, but we really would want to get the word out that there are openings in the Head Start program for your children to be enrolled. And as we move towards normalcy and bringing children back into classrooms, we are continuing to make adjustments. So one of the things that we're doing is moving towards making sure that the Head Start families have devices that are up to date, that if we're in this virtual situation for a longer period of time, that we'll be able to be more interactive. As far as childcare goes, childcare is one of the newer programs for me. Up until a couple weeks ago, it was a program that had been under the Assistant Commissioner Rhymer Brown for many, many years. So at the present time, the department is trying to ensure that subsidies that were provided for childcare providers through the CARES Act, there were flexibilities and allowances made for the fact that classrooms were closed. So we did receive federal dollars to be able to continue to provide some subsidies for childcare providers as though children were in classrooms. And, you know, there were some processes in terms of the bureaucracy and getting those payments out, but we're trying to make sure that we make all childcare providers whole in terms of ensuring that they get those federal dollars provided for them by the CARES Act.
One of the things that I had a discussion on with Senator Blyden on Wednesday, and we're going to head to our first break, and when we come back, we'll pick it up here, is there is an additional family cost for everyone where the things that the government provide when children are in school have now been shifted from a cost perspective back to the family home, back to the home. For example, you know, the education department provides X amount of meals. That is no longer the case because the children are now home learning remotely and things of that nature. So you mentioned the word subsidies. So when we come back, we'll get the commissioner back in to talk about how we're looking at a strategic, comprehensive approach to subsidizing some of the costs that the government bore when things were normal. Of course, they're not normal right now, and things of that nature when we come back. Okay, ladies?
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Okay, good. First break, analyze this, A Beautiful Friday in Paradise, November 20th, 2020. We'll be back right after this.
The U.S. Virgin Islands Police Department's police officers and civilian support staff provide services to the general public 24/7. This department has the responsibility to provide professional service to you at all times. The VIPD is working harder to meet that goal. Please get into the habit of using the compliment forms to commend officers who provide a quality standard of service. It's a morale booster for the recipient. If an officer or civilian needs to improve their customer service, feel free to submit a complaint form. Compliment and complaint forms are available in the lobby of all police stations, at public libraries, some government businesses, and from any patrol officer. Desk officers can also assist you to complete this form. Secure drop boxes are at all police station lobbies. Just insert your form and internal affairs agents will process your complaint impartially and fairly. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Virgin Islands Police Department.
The Department of Labor is happy to announce the IVR system, the interactive voice response system, is for unemployment insurance claimants to receive information regarding their benefits and other general updates. So stay tuned for more on the IVR system and look out for notices so that you can try today. Once you receive your notice, you can try the hotline at 340-715-5744. That's the interactive voice response system for unemployment insurance updates.
And we're back here on Analyze This on, thank God it's Friday. And we got the Human Services Department here, and we got the commish along with her two able assistant commissioners. So I'm glad that we could have this discussion so the public can understand how this particular department impacts our existence here in the Virgin Islands. Good morning, ladies, once again.
Good morning.
Yeah, commish, the assistant commissioner, in this case Benjamin, was speaking about potential subsidies. There's an administrative dynamic that comes with, I believe, what is the second biggest department in government. How are you guys making out with respect to the financials in providing the services that the namesake of your department represents, being that it is human services?
Interesting question. I love it when you like put me on the spot. So I think that the understanding for human services is that when we go before the legislature and request funding, we've done an in-depth study of what our needs are. And there's some critical hires that we have to have in order for us to do our job effectively and to ensure customer service, to ensure that we're adhering to our federal mandates as well as our local statutory requirements. So having said that, human services, yes, the second largest agency in government, we have a hybrid approach to our fiscal funding. So we have obviously a local budget, government of the Virgin Islands. We have federal funding. And then we have a hybrid approach where, you know, your federal funding is not a free set of funds. You know, there's always a match requirement. So let's just say that I get $10 million from the federal government, that they're going to say, well, what is the Virgin Islands government going to do in order to ensure I'm going to give you 10? Can you give me one or two? And that match requirement is crucial for us to continue to get the federal funds that we have. So definitely been an interesting year, especially with COVID. I added a few expenses that were not anticipated for 2020. And that includes, you know, your cleaning, your sanitizing, your PPEs, your personal personal protective gear, whether it be masks, gloves, gowns. You know, the 24-hour facilities are crucial. The type of masks that we use are different depending upon our front and direct lines, our homemaker services, our Meals on Wheels. And so that's been pretty tight. We've been lucky that we were able to get some CARES Act funding through a lot of our programs. And so getting that online on budgets and being able to spend that has been a little challenging for us, but I think we're seeing some light at the end of the tunnel. What do you think, ladies? We're seeing some light there?
We are. Yeah, we definitely are. And I, you know, you were saying, Mr. James, about the families who are needing the assistance. And during this time, what we're seeing, a lot of the families reaching out, food stamps or SNAP is a big one that many of the families are reaching out for. And with our additional COVID dollars and with our regular SNAP monies, we've been able to give a lot of the food supplemental assistance to the families to help them during this very difficult time. I know everybody had on their lips PEBT, pandemic EBT, and that was a help not only to our regular SNAP clients, but to all of our families with children who attended school.
And I also wanted to point out that the Head Start program continues to provide meals via meal distributions. And we started that back on September 14th on St. Thomas and then on September 16th on St. Croix. So we are doing daily distribution of meals for our Head Start families.
Okay, so the efforts there, that's the most important thing, right? And the attention to detail?
We're maximizing every federal dollar that we can. And so one of the things we did, of course, was the pandemic EBT. That way we worked with public and private schools. So anybody that was had free and reduced lunch, so we were able to do that at the end of the school year. And for September, it was just one of those things where if the federal government allowed for us to do it, we tried our best to get that allotment so we could have it in the Virgin Islands. It has not been up and ready for October or November yet. So people have been calling saying, when am I going to get my PEBT for October and November? If we're able to do it, we will, and we'll make sure that we publicize that. The waivers and flexibilities for each of the eligibility programs has been crucial for us. It continues with the safety standards, and so it had waived some of the in-person type of visits. We instituted drop boxes. We've done telephone interviews. We've reduced some of the staff in our offices to maintain social distancing and safety. We've gotten clear plexiglass type of things in order to make sure that there's that shield. When you're a people business like us, it's really difficult sometimes. Our seniors love to come to the office to drop off their bills too, because they want to make sure that that's what they do. Every other month they come in to make sure that their bills are paid. So they want to see us. They want to drop it off, hand in. We're kind of like, stay home. We got you. And they're like, no, I want to see you. So there's a habit there, but we want to make sure that we keep them safe and sound. So the flexibilities and waivers have been really wonderful for our community. It does help. Every single little bit helps. We've maximized allotments in some of our cash assistance programs for the household. So that's been helpful as well. So we're doing everything we can. There is some child care monies that are going to come up. And so for our child care providers, and this is what it's important to know. We are behind in a little bit of payments. I'm going to be very transparent. We're getting a lot of calls from our providers about their payments, and we're working on them diligently to make sure that they have. But there's some money coming down the pike for our child care providers. So making sure that they're all up to date on all their documentation and their paperwork and their FIRE and all that, because there might be some funds that could allow them to upgrade their facility. So if they have all their stuff, their ducks in a row, they'll be eligible for some of this federal funding that we have currently. And we want to make sure that we spend every single penny.
Now, today's the 20th of November. Technically, we're still 10 days away before the end of the hurricane season. I think it's safe to say that we were pretty fortunate in 2020, which is a good thing given what we're dealing with, managing COVID-19 and all that. But we did have a couple of brushes. I think we had one in particular, Lara, that worked away a little bit south of us. But I was glad. I think I had you on with Vitima Director Jashin and the governor, and we were talking about the preparation and actually just oversight responsibilities for human services in anticipation of a weather system working through the territory. Knocking on wood, as it relates to hurricanes and tropical systems here in 2020, Commish?
I prayed. I was on my knees every day, every single day, that we would get a little bit of relief during this hurricane season. And we're so blessed that we did not have a severity. We did have some rain, a lot of rain, some flooding. We understand that there's a lot of people that are still in compromised residential places. We were still encouraging safer at home, stay at home, shelter at home, because the importance of that for your safety during a COVID environment was the most important thing. MassCare ESF6, or the Emergency Support Function 6, is huge. It's a huge function for us, and that makes sure that we are making sure our community is safe and sound in the event of a storm. But it's really all hazards, and COVID-19 is considered an all hazard. And so making sure that our responsibilities are up to date. We've updated our COVID-19 pandemic plan. We've done which is a sheltering plan for non-congregate care. We've updated a lot of training procedures, how to do things, what to do, how to do it differently in a COVID-19 environment, which has been very, very important for us, because we can't continue to do the same thing that we did before in this type of environment. So lots of lessons learned about for 2020. We're never as prepared as you think you are. So you'll always have to look at what went well, what didn't go well, do kind of a washout and debrief after every single event to ensure that, hey, the next time we do it, let's do it this way. Communication to the public is really important. We had a senior disaster registry. AC Reimer Brown could talk a little bit more about that. The registry and the purpose of that is not necessarily services, but a tracking mechanism. If you're living alone or you have a disability of a certain age, it allows us to track you in the event of a major disaster. At least we know where you are so we can go looking for you if we didn't hear from you. AC Reimer Brown, did you have anything else to add on that one?
No, a little bit. That it is for the disaster registry is for senior citizens who live alone, and also the dependent adults or adults with disabilities who live alone. And we have been doing pretty well with over 600 individuals that we've registered, and we're able to send out text alerts to those who have cell phones and directly call those who do not. And so that has been a very good opportunity for us to identify this vulnerable group. So we're happy to be able to support the Elder and Dependent Adult Registry. And just for those of you who are seniors and who have disabilities and live alone, that service is still available. Many of you may have registered. Some of you have gone to the Bureau of Motor Vehicles. That is still an option. Some people have registered at the Bureau of Elections, because these are people that are partnering with us as well. And you can call us directly at the Department of Human Services as well to register for the disaster registry. So this is a very important area to keep these seniors and persons with disabilities aware of any disasters and things that they can do to protect themselves during this time.
Now, the seniors, since you went there, I don't want you to think you're going to come here and we're going to dodge some of the issues and some of the situations that you had to deal with that weren't necessarily popular. Of course, the Queen Louise home situation with COVID. I'm glad that you weathered that storm. How did that work out? And the relationships with the medical facilities like the Schneider Hospital and other agencies, Department of Health, to mitigate that and get it back to where we are comfortable now with taking care of our elderly.
We're still mourning the loss of our residents from Queen Louise. Our staff, we're still grieving that a little bit with the families. And those residents that are staying with us are part of our family. We care for them for long periods of time. And so we're still grieving that, so we want to understand that. During COVID, what's interesting is that during a nursing shortage, you know, sometimes staff have one and two jobs, and so they may be at our facility, but they also might be at the hospital. We were very blessed to be able to have a collaborative effort when it came to the safety and security. So anybody that's been to Queen Louise Home understands that it's not a skilled nursing facility. It's a residential home, right? And it's more of a congregate care facility. Versus a non-congregate, meaning that the rooms are not separated, that they're involved and they're like in one larger space. And so to keep them individually safe, we separated them out once we got a positive COVID case, and we separated the positives and negatives during that time frame. And we made sure that they were tested and adhered to. And of course, we have physicians and nursing staff to ensure their security and safety, not only for the residents, but also for the staff that care for them. And it's not just the nursing staff. You're looking at your administrative staff. You're looking at your kitchen and nutrition staff, your maintenance crew. So it takes a lot to run a facility like that. And so I want to make sure that we give kudos to everybody that's been working diligently over time, above and beyond, to ensure that. And so it was a difficult time for us. I don't ever think we're out of the woods. So it's always like, what can we do better? What can we do better? What can we do to amidst this? You know, and so I think that as long as we're striving to do better, we will be better. We were very blessed in St. Croix for Herbert Grigg Home for the Age, that we did not have that same type of situation. And so we continue to do our due diligence with testing, our screening, and making sure that our staff and our residents are safe.
Well, you know, we were dealing with a outbreak here on St. Croix back in July, and we remediated that. And then when we thought we were out of the woods, the situation at St. Thomas happened, and the governor made the right decision. He shut us down for 3 weeks, put us back into stay-at-home mode from about the 17th of August to somewhere around the 7th or 8th. Of September, and then the numbers reflected it. So I'm hoping, and I think we are, that you know, your agency is driven by data and not gut feelings and all that stuff, right?
No, we go strict on the data, and you know, our lead agency, you know, Department of Health, CDC. I'm making sure that we're continuing to make decisions based on the best interests and best practices. And so just so for the knowledge is that we shut down all visitation as well as our senior citizen centers in March prior to really the whole shutdown. Our policy and procedures have been changed and updated accordingly. And so our staff has been retrained and trained again regarding the PPEs and how to use them properly. And so for us, that is the most important thing, is like, what is the most updated information and how do we get that to our staff to ensure the safety of everybody at hand? That's just not the Homes for the Age and the senior citizens centers. We also go out into people's homes and we do direct care. So our adult protective services, we're investigating every single day, same with our child protective services unit, intake and emergency services. I think that we also do homemaker services and Meals on Wheels. And so we're in people's houses and their homes or delivering meals and trying to keep us as safe as possible. And we have to continue that. So I give kudos to our Governor Brian and Tregenza Roach and the administration for coming together as a team to ensure the health and safety of our community.
When we come back after this particular break, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about all of the facilities that fall under human services and talk about the finances in terms of what percentages are local, just ballpark, no need to be specific, local and federal, because of course you are eligible for a lot of federal funding. And I'm sure you did your homework, even though you came in 2019, you did your homework when the agency was struggling in 2016. If my memory serves me correct, there was some situations there that had required some changes and stuff like that. So we'll talk about that when we come back.
Wonderful.
Analyze this.
Look forward to it.
Analyze this with Human Services Leadership Commissioner and two Assistant Commissioners. We'll be back right after this.
Want to work part-time, doing your part in keeping the Virgin Islands safe? Join the Virgin Islands Police Department and become a police auxiliary officer. The starting salary for a VIPD police auxiliary officer is $30,715 per year for a 30-hour work week. For more information and to apply, visit jointhevipd.com. This message is brought to you by the Virgin Islands Police Department.
At Bank of St. Croix, we offer a suite of consumer and business services with mobile banking, mobile deposit, and online banking. You can bank with us from anywhere 24/7. Bank of St. Croix has two locations, one in Gallows Bay, 340-773-8500, and one in Peters Rest, 340-713-8500. Bank of St. Croix, bankofstcroix.com.
Hi, it's Rachel Martin. Lately, I've been broadcasting Morning Edition live from my basement. When social distancing started, my colleague Rolando got on his bicycle and brought me all the equipment that I needed to work from home. Making public radio is totally a team effort. And if you're one of the listeners who donate to this NPR station, you're part of the team. Thank you. Together, we keep NPR on air.
Please donate right now at WTJX.org.
And we're back and analyze this. Department of Human Services is on the floor. Let me go through the full introduction again. Good morning, Assistant Commissioner Michael Rema Brown from St. Thomas. How are you doing?
Good morning. Good morning. I'm doing well.
Sorry about that. I apologize. Assistant Commissioner Carla Benjamin, how are you?
Yes, sir. Fine, thank you.
Okay, good. And the commish, the boss, Kimberly Kazi Gomez. How you doing?
I'm here. I am fabulous. Thanks good. For asking.
What's up? I ain't seen no brothers. Colin Schatz in Human Services. What's up with that, man? Seriously, what's up with us?
We were actively recruiting.
I'm just teasing. We're not into gender here. We're into productivity. Let's talk about the agency. Assistant Commissioner Carla Benjamin, give me some of the, different areas like Herbert Grigg and Head Start and all that stuff that we're responsible for here on St. Croix.
Okay, you said we're going to talk about facilities. So,
facilities, I'm sorry. Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
One of the facilities that we are responsible for that I have oversight of is the Youth Rehabilitation Center. As we know, YRC has been around for a while, and we are always looking for avenues to leverage funding where we could try to update the facility because it is very old. In this COVID environment, though, we, as Commissioner mentioned, we suspended visits by all outside entities back in March as a way of protecting both our residents and our staff. During the COVID environment, though, our census has been relatively low. It has remained, for the most part, below 10 residents. We have conducted COVID testing a couple of times since July for both residents and staff. The first time we conducted testing, that was to ensure that staff and residents are their status is negative. That was in response to a staff person who had who had come up positive. And then after that, we proactively retested to make sure that everyone who accesses the facility is continues to be safe, along with other measures such as, you know, temperature checks at the gates and completion of self-reporting surveys and such. Because of the low census, we definitely are not having any challenges when it comes to two of the three components of YRC, specifically the security portion and the nutrition portion. We're good. We are experiencing some staffing challenges specific to the treatment component, and we are working on within the confines of the finances, trying to enhance the staffing there so that we can make improvements as far as the treatment component goes. Luckily, though, this COVID situation has been a curse and a blessing in many ways. So we are able to leverage virtual and online strategies for bringing some of those services to our children who are at YRC. And we're checking in not only to make sure that they have PPEs and that they have all the supplies and stuff that they need to ensure that the staff is safe and that the residents are safe. The residents, for the most part, are not going anywhere. They come to the facility, and school, of course, is virtual. The only need they would have to come out into the community is if perhaps there was a medical issue that required that. So from that perspective, the only moving parts there are our staff who are coming to work and going home. So we're trying to make sure that we ensure that we don't have any instances of quote-unquote outbreaks or anything. And we've been very fortunate that way.
I'm sure when we had the incident in St. Thomas at Queen Louise Home, there was a concern for the parallel agency on St. Croix, Herbert Grigg. Herbert Grigg has made out well over the last 8 to 9 months?
Yes. I would say it has done pretty well as far as the COVID, that we don't have any of our residents with any COVID positive. So that has been a tremendous blessing on the St. Croix side at the Herbert Grigg home. And as AC Benjamin said, we continue to do all of our prevention measures with our staff. When you go to the home, if you go there, and we don't have visitors, but as we may go on the premises, you see your staff in full protective gear when they're interacting with our seniors, with their mask, with their gowns, with everything that they can, because as AC Benjamin said, they are the moving ones coming back and forth. So everything we do is to prevent transmitting anything to our seniors, whether it's COVID or a flu or a cold or anything that is communicable.
That's good to hear. Now, back to the St. Croix AC. The YRC situation has to be very, very delicate and sensitive, given that you're talking about children who are housed under 18, parents wanting to make sure they're all right. How do we go about balancing, protecting the institution, the facility, from, you know, being exposed, potentially exposed, and at the same time wanting parents to have that contact with the children?
Well, that particular dynamic is being navigated by the social workers, because when residents come to YRC, they are assigned a social worker. There's a social worker at YRC, and then there's a social worker at our Division of Intervention Services. So the security measures that we mentioned, which includes suspension of introducing any persons onto the facility, is still in place. However, there were alternative strategies such as for the purposes of court, because for the most part, our residents are not very long-term. Sometimes they come to the facility, and when they do, we have a designated area where they're quarantined for 14 days before they're brought into the space with other residents who have been on the facility. Mm-hmm. And the Superior Court of the Virgin Islands implemented virtual court proceedings. So the residents and the social worker and everyone from the Department of Human Services who is involved in that process are meeting virtually online. The protocols and everything are in place. One of the things that we're looking at...
Go ahead.
I was going to say one of the things that we're looking at is getting our virtual visits in place for the residents and their relatives. Of course, there's some logistical things that need to be in place to ensure that that happens. As far as the virtual connections go, literally and figuratively connections, there still has to be a level of due diligence. We really have no way of knowing who is on the other line or who is in the other space when you engage in non-in-person contact. But we're trying to ensure that the connectivity is there in terms of the technology and that the protocols are there so that our children and the processes all remain safe.
Now, Kamesh, you not only have an obligation to make sure that our young people who are incarcerated, lack of a better term, remanded at YRC.
Thank you for using that word.
Remanded. Just trying to be politically correct here. Who are remanded at the YRC are safe, but you also have an education responsibility. Is that correct?
It is correct. It actually is, we do human services, but so does education.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a collaborative approach. So we used to have teachers on site, and that varied whether it be one teacher or four teachers at any given time. Our our residents and the number that have actually been has lowered a little bit over the last 6 months, and even but looking at the trends over the last 3 years of what that looks like. But we've been doing virtual, just like everybody else, we've been doing virtual. The only challenges that we've had is, the facility as far as the connection to Wi-Fi. And that just happens to be interesting because I guarantee you a lot of our students that are working, that are doing school from home are having internet issues or Wi-Fi issues whenever WAPA goes out. How do you do school? If it's out for two hours, there's no internet, there's no power, and then they're losing out as well. So we work collaboratively with education. I think the biggest thing for us, too, is, we love to have our community groups come in and do and help and work with us. We love that community connection, that public-private connection. And so we haven't been able to do that because of COVID. And so how do we do it creatively? We actually just recently did, I've been doing a series of town halls or huddles with the division since we can't really come together. So we've been doing Teams meetings with all of the divisions. And we recently did, I'd say a series of four actually for YRC and for the Division of Intervention and Prevention Services. There's three shifts. So I wanted to make sure that all three shifts were able to be on it. So we had a series of those. And part of that has been like, what creative measures can we do for those residents that are coming in, realistically speaking? So if you're there for 1 or 2 months, realistically speaking, what's the best outcome for you? We don't want you to come back to YRC. So that recidivism, we want to make sure that whatever we do before, middle, and after is in the best interest of that particular resident or youth. And so I think that we need to look at it from a preventative aspect of things. How do you prevent someone from being remanded in the first place? And that's really where our money and our bang for the buck goes, because if you do that, then that could prevent them going from big jail later and to BOC and graduating from a YRC into a Bureau of Corrections.
I just wanted to emphasize, since your question was about the education component, I wanted to emphasize that the children's education is administered by the Department of Education. I mean, there was a time when children at YRC used to be taken from the facility to the actual school campus. I'm talking pre-COVID. But even pre-COVID, for years before COVID, that modality had changed to where the school is actually on YRC's site. So there's actually a principal, and there's teachers, and there's special education services. All of those were brought to the campus. So now that the Department of Education is administering educational services virtually, YRC also is doing the same thing. So it's not discretionary on our part at all about how education happens. It is administered by the Department of Education. And children who come to us who have dropped out or are not engaged, we work with the Department of Education to get them re-enrolled.
That's good to hear. Kamesh, how big is your department financially?
Financially, well, if I had my wish or what actually I got a little under $55 million for GBI and probably a couple hundred for federal funds coming rolling in.
She said that kind of quick. You don't want me to process that. You don't want to process that, huh?
I'm a little, yeah. So for we went to budget hearing in July, hoping for a $66 million budget for GBI, and we didn't get that.
What'd you get?
We got 55, 54, really, if you look at it.
Okay.
Some
so,
of those.
So, so
of
you wanted.
I wanted 66
you,
million.
You wanted 66. No. We're gonna have a math class now. me and you ladies are gonna have a math class now, right?
You wanted 66 million.
You wanted 66, and you got 54, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
but some of that 54 actually is miscellaneous that goes to nonprofits, so it doesn't necessarily come directly to human services. So,
but you're the custodian agent for those miscellaneous disbursements, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so I'm doing the math here, right? I'm gonna divide this into three. Let me see. 22 and
you're doing math online.
18 okay. And 22, 9 out of 11. So you got about 82 to 83% of what you wanted. Okay, and you're gonna make do with that? I mean, I know you're gonna work magic and make it happen, but where are we looking at paring back, so that the $54 million can work for the people of the Virgin Islands? Plus, how much federal money do you get on an annual basis? Ballpark.
Ballpark $200 million.
Okay. So in reality, annually we're looking at like $250 million to cover all these different agencies and services.
So let's remember the very beginning of our conversation. Mm-hmm. When I said that, we get federal money, but there's always a match requirement.
Uh-huh.
And so part of that $66 million request was some of that match requirement. So I have a match requirement for Head Start, Medicaid, SNAP, or family assistance program for a lot of those things. We have match requirements for those.
So you're saying the $200 million, a part of that $200 million, a part of the $54 million, is match money for you to access or have or tap into the full $200 million on the federal side.
And we did do an impact statement for each division as well. And so what that does is that reduction in monetary money doesn't allow us to staff at the levels for us to be at optimal service. And so if we're not able to do the match requirements, so let's just say this position for Medicaid is a 50-50 match. So if GVI is on a hold for hiring or at a pause and I can't hire that position, that directly impacts my federal program. It impacts services, it impacts the total number of people that we are able to serve in a timely and consistent fashion.
Okay.
The impact is my concern mostly is staffing levels. We're at a severe deficit. So when I was here before as assistant commissioner under Commissioner Fenton under the Young administration, we had almost 1,000 employees.
What are we now?
Just under 700.
That's a good place to pick up the conversation when we come back from this.
Great. Top of
the
hour
break.
Yeah. Awesome.
You know what time
it
is. We'll be back right after this. We got Human Services here breaking down the services they provide to the territory. We'll be back right after this.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect that of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.